Today is Tuesday, July 27th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedwofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Taliban protests U.S. strikes on their forces in Afghanistan.
The Taliban are attempting to create a sense of inevitability about their campaign. They're wrong. There's no preordained conclusion to this fight.
Plus, the U.S. and international community call for calm in Tunisia.
President Kais Saied's decision to sack the prime minister and suspend parliament, aided by the army, has been described as a coup by his opponents.
Also, forces from SADC nations arrived to tackle insurgency in Mozambique. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The Taliban say that increased U.S. strikes to halt their offensives are a violation of the Doha Agreement they signed with Washington last year. The U.S. military has increased airstrikes in support of Afghan security forces as the insurgents continue to gain ground across Afghanistan. VOA's Afghanistan and Pakistan Bureau Chief Ayesha Tanzim has more from Islamabad.
The sound of Taliban forces taking over a rural district in Afghanistan. Ever since the United States announced plans to withdraw from the country, such sounds are far more common. Now, a counteroffensive. U.S. General Frank McKenzie heads the U.S. Central Command that includes Afghanistan. He was in Kabul Sunday to meet senior Afghan officials, including President Ashraf Ghani.
The United States has increased airstrikes in the support of Afghan forces over the last several days, and we're prepared to continue this heightened level of support in the coming weeks if the Taliban continue their attacks.
The Taliban have called these strikes a violation of the Doha Agreement they signed with the Americans last year. And with the speed with which the Taliban has taken over territory over the last 3 months, seems to have taken both Afghan and U.S. officials by surprise. The Taliban uploaded social media videos of Afghan soldiers surrendering in district after district, a huge blow to the morale of government forces. In response, President Ghani said his army has changed its strategy and will reallocate forces to protect urban areas. Ghani said his urgent and practical new plan would change the situation on the ground in the next 3 to 6 months. A change on the ground is exactly what is needed, according to General McKenzie.
The government of Afghanistan faces a stern test in the days ahead. The Taliban are attempting to create a sense of inevitability about their campaign. They're wrong. There's no preordained conclusion to this fight.
The Afghan plan aims to concentrate forces around cities. McKenzie said the Taliban should expect to face fierce battle if they try to take them. Pressed by journalists in Kabul, the head of CENTCOM refused to say whether the U.S. would continue airstrikes after August 31st, the deadline for U.S. withdrawal. He promised continuing logistical support to Afghan forces, but noted that on the ground, the Afghan troops will have to carry out their own fight. Ayesha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
The latest round of peace talks between the Taliban and the Afghan government in Qatar ended July 19th with no apparent progress. The group's past refusal to accept women's freedoms has many Afghans worried about the future. VOA's Mahdi Mahreen has this report.
Since the Taliban fall from power in Afghanistan in 2001, the passage of modern civil law has allowed Afghan women to improve their lives both socially and politically. They can work, study, vote, get elected to parliament, and perform in the highest political and managerial positions. The Afghan cabinet has seen several female ministers over the past 20 years.
Afghanistan's new generation is no longer a generation that can accept the Taliban's extremist ideology. We hope the situation that arises will be something acceptable for Afghan society, especially women.
But the reality is that U.S. troops will leave in September. Peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban are stalled, and women have been underrepresented during the past talks. In late June, Taliban officials put out a statement promising that in post-conflict Afghanistan, women would be able to seek work and education. But in areas of Afghanistan retaken by the Taliban, there are reports of restrictions being imposed on women, and that's worrying to many Afghans.
Our fear is that the Taliban will come back with the same ideology as before, with the same savagery and barbarism of their previous years. We hope the outcome of the peace talks will be something that does not impose restrictions on people, especially women and children.
The Taliban rules of Afghanistan from 1995 to 2001, and enforcement of fundamentalist Islamic law marked a dark period for Afghan women. They were not allowed to leave home, work, or study, and were forced to wear the full hijab or burqa on the street during the travel and even in emergencies. Women had virtually no right to determine their own political and social destiny and were severely isolated. The oppression of women was unprecedented in Afghan history.
The biggest concern of women and girls is having the right to choose in all areas of life, from stepping out of the home to meet their simplest needs, to choosing a spouse and choosing to study, work, and more. Women are worried that if the Taliban come back, they will be imprisoned at home and will no longer have the right to be in the sun. The Taliban view women as a man views his belongings and material things. Even worse, a man protects his belongings, but the Taliban do not do that for women. Their views leave no room for hope for Afghan women.
Even if the Afghan peace talks results in a deal, Afghan women rights activists worry the Taliban will try to use their renewed influence to limit women's freedoms. Mahdi Mehrain for VOA News, Washington.
U.S. forces in Iraq within months will end their combat duties there, President Joe Biden said Monday during a White House meeting with Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kademi. Details from VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
Alongside the Iraqi Prime Minister in the Oval Office, U.S. President Joe Biden said Monday that U.S. troops in Iraq will continue to train, assist, and help deal with countering the Islamic State terror group.
But we are not going to be by the end of the year in a combat mission.
Biden did not reveal how many of the approximately 2,500 U.S. troops in Iraq will remain there. And as a senior White House official put it, nobody is going to declare mission accomplished. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
The United States and several other countries have called for calm in Tunisia after violent protests broke out following the suspension of parliament Sunday. Tunisia's president invoked emergency powers to fire the prime minister following months of demonstrations over a worsening economic crisis. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
A new chapter in Tunisia's struggle for democracy. President Kais Saied's decision to sack the prime minister and suspend parliament, aided by the army, has been described as a coup by his opponents. Lawmakers from Ennahda, the moderate Islamist party and the most powerful member of the ruling coalition, joined protests outside parliament Monday.
It is an attempt to overthrow the constitution and the values of the republican system.
The president invoked emergency constitutional powers as he announced the suspension of parliament. Speaking late Monday, he rejected accusations of a coup.
Article 80 of the Constitution gave the President of the Republic the right to take the procedures he sees necessary in the face of an imminent danger. We ask the people not to take to the streets. The most dangerous thing faced by countries and societies is internal explosion, internal fighting.
But Saied appeared to encourage his own supporters as he joined demonstrations in Tunis on Sunday. They welcomed the suspension of parliament.
We have taken back our country. This is the first time I've gone out to the streets to celebrate.
The crisis has exposed Tunisia's enduring political divides, now played out in violent street clashes. This group attacked offices of the Ennahda party Monday. Meanwhile, police raided and closed down the Tunis offices of news broadcaster Al Jazeera. The political crisis follows months of disputes and deadlock. Tunisia's economy shrank by 8% last year after the pandemic hit the tourism sector. The converging crises have seen frequent street protests in recent months. Washington says it is concerned about developments and is in touch with Tunisian leaders. Tunisia was the birthplace of the Arab Spring in 2011. The latest developments threaten its fragile gains, says analyst Anas El Ghomati. Tunisia's young democracy is facing its biggest test since street protests ousted former dictator Zine El Abidine Ben Ali a decade ago. And the outcome could have ramifications across the Arab world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Myanmar state-run MRTV said the Union Election Commission annulled the results of multi-party general elections held last November 8 due to violations of election rules and regulations. To take a look at the broader implications of the decision, International Edition Steve Miller reached out to Andrew Gorse, a political science professor and regional expert at Augusta University in Georgia.
International observers who were present for the November 2020 election, including folks from the Carter Center, found that the election was generally free and fair, and that there were a relatively high level of professionalism amongst the election officials. The actions by General Min Aung Hlaing in February of this year, in essence, already annulled the elections and the results. That is, the coup in and of itself removed the possibility that the National League for Democracy would be come to power under this year. The interesting thing about this from the Electoral Commission, which is, of course, appointed by the junta, by the Hlaing regime, is that it looks like they are setting the groundwork for an effort to contest elections where they can be more sure of the result in the future. Of course, we don't know this for sure, but in the past, the military has taken actually a relative, or the Burmese military, that is, has taken a relatively hands-off approach in terms of manipulating elections. They've done so through constitutional means, and the 2008 election has certain kinds of provisions that were always intended to vouchsafe the power of the Tamado, the Burmese armed forces. But in the 2015 elections, Burmese military allowed the National League for Democracy to contest the election and, in fact, allowed the results, which led to Aung San Suu Kyi's party being victorious, to go forward. What it looks like is happening now is that Hlaing is going to set the stage for elections that will produce results that please him. He's actually been talking about a plan for the country, which he calls disciplined democracy.
So can you expand upon that a little bit? Because if we take a look at what's happened in the country since that February 1st coup, a number of NLD members have been arrested, been brought up on charges. I mean, we're seeing the trial of Aung San Suu Kyi, the country's de facto leader, as well as the president Win Myint. The junta went as far as to start the dissolution process of the National League for Democracy back in May. So what does this vision of democracy that the junta is starting to lay out really mean in terms of what most political scientists call democracy moving forward?
Well, it looks like what Hlaing and the junta are doing is to run sort of a more conventional authoritarian regime that pays lip service to democracy and has elections, but nonetheless makes sure that the results suit its own goals.
That's Andrew Gauss, a professor of political science and regional expert at Augusta University in Georgia, speaking with my colleague Steve Miller. Hearings begin today in the House of Representatives before the Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. VOA's Steve Radish explains the committee's work and the political controversy surrounding it.
Law enforcement officers who defended the U.S. Capitol will be the first to testify in front of the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on Congress's home. But the committee's existence is only widening the political split between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats originally proposed an independent commission based on the success of the commission that delivered
a widely accepted investigation into the 2001 9/11 terrorist attacks on the U.S.
The commission was going to be a body with much more clout.
Norm Ornstein is a political scientist with the American Enterprise Institute. He said an independent commission would have the full force of Congress and the White House behind it.
It would have had a wider range of members and very possibly would have been able to get more muscle in terms of its ability to get witnesses and the important information out there.
Despite getting agreement on nearly all their demands, Senate Republicans blocked a vote for an independent commission in late May.
I urge my colleagues to vote aye.
Democratic Speaker of the House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi then proposed a select committee to investigate. Republicans accused Democrats of wanting a predetermined outcome.
Making sure that it never happens again requires a fully bipartisan solution, not a partisan committee, rigged from the start.
Along with seven Democrats, Pelosi appointed Republican Liz Cheney, who was ousted from her party's leadership post because of her open defiance of the false narrative touted by President Trump that the 2020 election was stolen from him.
Some of the other Republicans who have been outspoken on this are under enormous pressure from within their own party not to participate. It takes a great deal of courage, which Liz Cheney has shown, to go against your party and your party leader.
As the minority party leader, Republican Kevin McCarthy was allowed five committee selections. Pelosi rejected two of them, Jim Jordan of Ohio and Jim Banks of Indiana.
They have made statements and taken actions that I think would impact the integrity, the work of the committee.
Pelosi has created a sham process. Unless Speaker Pelosi reverses course and seats all five Republicans, we will not participate.
McCarthy's January 6th phone call to then-President Trump, purportedly imploring the president to call off his supporters attacking the Capitol, could become part of the committee's probe. Again, Norm Ornstein.
He's trying to give himself cover for saying, this is not a legitimate committee, so I'm not going to cooperate.
Pelosi appointed a second Republican to the panel. Adam Kinzinger and Cheney were the only Republicans to vote with Democrats to create the committee to investigate the attack. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
On the city, state, and federal level, more Americans are being required to get COVID-19 vaccines as the Delta variant surges. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
In California, Governor Gavin Newsom says it's no longer optional for government employees.
This is a requirement to prove you've been vaccinated.
Same deal in New York City. Mayor Bill de Blasio says either get the shots
or get tested once a week.
President Biden says the VA is now the first major federal agency requiring COVID-19 shots.
All docs working in facilities are going to have to be vaccinated.
Officials are encouraged vaccination rates are starting to rise again, offering hope those who were reluctant are changing their minds. Sagar Magani at the White House.
This is the Voice of America. An explosion at an industrial park for chemical companies has shaken the German city of Leverkusen, sending a large black cloud into the air. 16 people were injured and 5 remain missing. Germany's Federal Office of Civil Protection and Disaster Assistance classified the explosion as an extreme threat, unquote, and asked residents to stay indoors and keep windows and doors closed, but the fire department later said tests of the air showed no abnormalities. Human Rights Watch has accused Israeli military of carrying out attacks that, quote, apparently amount to war crimes, unquote, during an 11-day war against the Hamas militant group in May. The International Human Rights Group issued its conclusions on Tuesday after investigating 3 Israeli airstrikes that it said killed 62 Palestinian civilians. It said, quote, there were no evident military targets in the vicinity, unquote, of the attacks. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The World Health Organization warns e-cigarettes and other novel nicotine and tobacco products threaten progress in the fight against tobacco use across the globe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Many countries are making progress in adopting tobacco control measures to get their populations to quit smoking or to dissuade them from starting to smoke. But a new World Health Organization report finds governments are no match for the tobacco industry. For the first time, the WHO is presenting new data on electronic delivery systems such as e-cigarettes and heated tobacco products. The head of WHO's tobacco control program, Vinayak Prasad, tells VOA the tobacco industry is marketing these products to children and adolescents. He says e-cigarettes, which come in more than 15,000 different flavors, are being promoted to appeal to young people and get them hooked.
But only 3 countries have banned the use of flavors, stressed on. Also, 42% of the countries only restrict sale to minors, so children are able to buy e-cigarettes, saying that children who start using e-cigarettes are twice likely to become regular tobacco users. That's dangerous. It's a risk of re-normalization of tobacco in society.
WHO reports the proportion of people using tobacco has declined in most countries. However, the total number of people smoking remains stubbornly high because of population growth. The UN Health Agency estimates the number of current smokers at 1 billion. It adds 8 million people die prematurely from tobacco-related illnesses every year. Prasad says more than 80% of tobacco users live in developing countries. He says the tobacco industry is fighting to prevent countries from adopting regulations against the use of so-called smokeless products.
Biggest challenge today is the tobacco industry coming out with product at a very high frequency, claiming it to be cleaner, safer, less harmful, and putting the governments under a lot of pressure.
There is limited evidence that electronic devices are effective in weaning people off tobacco. WHO recommends the use of conventional quitting regimens. It also advises governments to implement regulations to stop non-smokers from starting. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The leaders of North and South Korea have started talking again. Both sides announced Tuesday it's the most significant inter-Korean dialogue in about 2 years. But it is not clear the exchange means North Korea will now re-engage with the outside world, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in have exchanged several letters since April. A South Korean presidential office spokesman says the two leaders agreed to restore inter-Korean hotlines the North had severed last year. He also says the two men will work toward regaining mutual trust as soon as possible. North Korea called the moves a big stride in promoting reconciliation. North-South relations had been strained for about 2 years, ever since North Korea's nuclear talks with the United States broke down. That's when the North turned on the South, cutting communications lines and even blowing up a joint liaison office.
임기가 얼마 안 남았음에도 불구하고
Seoul-based analyst Lim Oh-cho credits South Korea's president for sticking with the idea of talks. He also says U.S. President Joe Biden's recent comments may have helped. The Biden administration says it is open to a calibrated, practical approach to diplomacy with North Korea. It has also said it supports improved inter-Korean relations. But for inter-Korean relations to advance, talks with the U.S. will have to progress as well. That's because international sanctions prevent a wide range of economic and other cooperation with North Korea. A more immediate challenge may arrive next month, when regular U.S.-South Korea joint military exercises are set to begin. North Korea usually reacts angrily to the joint drills and often uses the occasions to test fire weapons or make other provocative statements. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
A trial opened Tuesday within the Vatican City walls of 10 defendants, including a once-powerful cardinal, for their alleged roles in the mismanagement of the Holy See's assets. That wealth included donations by rank-and-file Catholics. The trial is the largest in the modern history of the Vatican City State and has been held in a hall converted into a courtroom in the Vatican Museums. The most prominent defendant is Cardinal Angelo Becciu, an Italian who had headed the Holy See's office for approving sainthood until Pope Francis fired him. Becciu denies wrongdoing. Looming large in the investigation is the Vatican's disastrous London real estate investments. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.